right, as you can see, we are going to go back to Thessalonians this morning. So as we start the class, I'd like to remind us of something. You remember when Peter in 2 Peter chapter 1 says that we are to add to our faith? And then he lists many things: virtue, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness. Brotherly kindness is really, I think, what's going to shine through in our class this morning. Paul doesn't know these people. He's known them for maybe a year. And many of them have no real connection with him at all. And so in a very real sense, we might say that they were strangers. And so if we were to attend a congregation for, say, 6 months, and we would need to start, I guess, feeling the things that Paul describes here. So let's go ahead and just jump right in verse 17. Taken away. The Greek word here has the word orphan in it. What is an orphan?
Taken away from his parents.
Okay, someone whose parents have been taken away. And what's the emotions of that orphan? It's not just grief over the mom and dad, is it? Because he's lost something. He doesn't have something that's very necessary. So Paul uses that term. He uses the term that would describe someone who's bereft or someone who is desolate, someone who has lost something. So would we say that? I mean, if we were with a congregation for 6 months, a year, could we write them and say, I just feel bereft, I just feel empty because I'm not around you anymore, I'm so concerned about you? And yet, here's Paul. And in 2 Corinthians, he mentions that anxiety for all the churches. So Paul developed a close tie with all of the churches that he had a relationship with. And he's telling them here that we were taken away from you. We didn't want to be gone. But he says it's just for a short time. But then he goes on to say, in presence, but not in heart. So once again, we get this sense that once we meet Christians and we develop relationships with them, that, and let me just back up one step. When you have a family and you leave that family, do you just forget about them?
No.
No, there's a tie there. And if you hear something about them, does it bring concern? Are you interested in it? And so Paul, that's how Paul was with all of the churches. As you read through his various letters, you see that shining through. And I think there's a little bit of a key here in our own understanding of how much brotherly kindness we have. And Paul talks about that to the Ephesians. He says that we should be praying always for all the saints. And so he says, in heart, I'm still with you, but in presence, I'm not. And then he gives four superlatives in that next little statement: endeavored more eagerly to see your face with great desire. There's four words here. Endeavored is the word diligence, haste, zeal, and then the word eagerly has the idea of with a tremendous amount. So we are tremendously zealous to return. And then great desire. The Greek word desire here is the word for lust. It's the word James uses for lust. So is lust pretty strong? So, and then he puts intense in front of that. So Paul has intense desire and great diligence. He's searching and seeking, trying to find a way that he can come back. Now, let's remember something. The Thessalonians are being bombarded by people who want them to fall away, and they are saying things about Paul. Paul is a charlatan. Paul just came in to take your money. Paul doesn't really believe these things. Paul doesn't really care about you. And so these things are really important because he is showing these people, I love you, I care about you, I want to come back to you, I want to help you, I am zealously involved, and I want to see you. So the argument that might be made, Paul, he doesn't care. Well, does he care?
Yeah,
he cares a lot. So, well, then what's the problem? Verse 18, we wanted to come. Even I, Paul, time and again, time after time. Actually, in the Greek, it's once and twice, which is, I guess, their idiom for over and over and over again, once and twice. So we sought to come, wanted to come, zealous to come. And I often think about this when it comes to India and Malawi. I understand what Paul is saying here, because those kind of emotions come when you develop relationships with people and then you're not there. And problems arise, and you wish you could be there to help them. And so that's where Paul is. And yet, in the very bottom there, but Satan hindered us. Now, Paul's inspired, so he can say that. Would we ever want to say that? Satan hindered us? That's a pretty big stretch, isn't it? I mean, with time and chance, with all other kinds of circumstances, can we directly say, well, Satan was directly involved with this? So with Job suffered the loss of his possessions, his family, his health, and his relationships with others. Who do we know was directly responsible? Satan, because the scriptures say it. But have many people lost things like that without Satan being involved in it at all? So it's really, really important that we understand. I don't like it when people start talking about how God did this, or God's trying to tell me this, or Satan was involved with this, because how do we know that? See, these are words from an inspired man. He knows. And so we have to be careful. David, are you?
Yes. Just the opposite of that. You see it in contracts, especially when you're dealing with the insurance, acts of God. And I was like, how do you know if it's acts of God,
right,
versus cannot blame certain things on God that you don't know if it was God or it could be easily Satan. So
right. Prove it. Yeah, and I say, like I say, we just want to be so careful when we're talking about God, when we're talking about the devil. We need to realize that we are limited in our knowledge and understanding. And so even though we can see Jesus saying, I saw Satan fall from heaven, and even though we can see the Apostle Paul saying, Satan hindered us, we need to be aware. What did Peter say? Your adversary, the devil, is doing what?
Seeking whom he may devour.
Seeking whom he may devour. So we know he's there. We know he is, and so we have to be cautious, but at the same time, we don't want to take it too far. Virgil, and then Rob.
Yeah, I agree that we can't take it too far. And each case would have to be observed and examined and applied on basically an individual basis.
Right.
The context of what you're dealing with should give the answer as to whether this is my fault. Is it the climate that I'm in that I need to get out of? Is it something that ungodly people have put together and causing me to do this, that, or the other thing?
Right.
And those things do happen, but I agree that we have to be very careful and how we lay these judgments out.
Right. Rob?
You know, this case and several others in the New Testament, actually the whole Bible, often it's more from a human reasoning. You know, here's danger, here's something. The Holy Spirit tells Paul to pick up and leave and move and go on. And I've always thought, well, God's more powerful than the situation. Why can't he just stay there and bring in people to make things happen? And you know, you ever think of that? That he
sure.
Could, but he doesn't. And I often think about even our own lives. Sometimes it's better just to move on. Sometimes it's better just to the will of the Lord. Of course, it's nothing like what these fellows have. But it's interesting that he's been guided to move on for now and come back at the right time and so forth.
And we could say something similar. We might say circumstances hindered us. And would Satan be involved in that? Well, more than likely. Would time and chance be involved with that? Yes. Would our own personal decision? Sometimes it's not really anybody's fault, but who? But our own poor judgment, our own poor decision. So he would say Satan. We could say exactly the same thing, but I think we just have to be a little more vague. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah. Don't we sing a song? I'm not really sure where all the wording is about where things are happening to us while there are those that, well, we're trying to serve God, and then there are those
right.
Living in sin.
I wish I could get the song together, but
Yeah, I know the song.
Yeah, I do too, but I can't think the whole thing. But I know there's a song about it.
When there are others living about us.
Yeah, right.
Never molested.
Yeah, right.
Though in the wrong.
Would that kind of be?
Farther along, we'll know all about. Yeah. There it is. Farther along. That's the name of the song.
Oh, is that where it is? Okay.
Not that that matters, but go ahead.
Now I'm just saying, would that be kind of some, like in the same instance of what the words of that song would be about?
Yeah, and it's the same thing. Like I say, the book of Ecclesiastes makes it very clear that the after the curse, everything comes to everyone. So sometimes good things come to bad people, sometimes bad things come to good people. But when you're in a situation like this man, let's face it, most Christians are surrounded by who? Godly people or ungodly people?
Ungodly.
So they watch these ungodly people. I think Psalm 73 is dealing with that, where he says, my feet had almost slipped because I was envious of the wicked, because there's no pangs in their death, and they are just as happy as they could be. All right, well, anyway, the point that Paul is making here is that it wasn't by, I didn't just say I'm too busy, or I just don't have the time, or you're just not that important. We sought to come back with great zeal, with great intensity, and Satan is the one who kept us from being able to do that. And then now in verse 19 on the second page, he says, now let's look at this from another perspective. You are so valuable to me. This church, what is our hope or joy or crown of rejoicing? Is it not even you in the presence of our Lord Jesus Christ at his coming? Now, I've got two scriptures in there under verse 19. The one is, those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. And then in Proverbs it says, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he who wins souls is wise. Now, what's the one thing that we can do that has eternal value? If I work on my house, if I take care of this particular activity, or I have this hobby, when does that go away? The moment we die. But the time we spend working with God's people, when does that go away? See, it never does. And Paul is saying here that it's going to come back to me. I want to be working with you because you are my hope, my joy, and my crown of rejoicing at or in the presence of the Lord at his coming. So where's Paul looking to when he talks about the value of the Thessalonians to him? Second coming of Christ, right?
Yeah.
He's looking to the second coming of Christ, and he's saying, you will be my hope, my joy, and my crown. Now, why do you think the Thessalonians would be his hope at the second coming of Christ? What is it about working with new converts and converting people and helping people get to heaven? How is that a hope? What is it that we would be hoping for when the Lord returns and he deals with that? What's that?
Stayed the course.
Faithfulness.
But did Paul tell Timothy or Titus three times in the book of Titus that God's people need to be zealous of good works? That if we have good works that God afore prepared, that we should walk in them. And James said, faith without works is dead. So if Paul can go before the Lord on the judgment day and say, look at all of these people that are here in part because of the work that I did. That's my hope. That's my joy. And that's my crown. And so Paul sees the Thessalonian church here, and he says the same thing to the Philippians, right above the line, is it not even you, right in the middle of the page. It says, therefore, my beloved and longed for brethren, my joy and my crown, so stand fast in the Lord, beloved. And so Paul has a view of Christians, a view of the people he's working with that is, I think, very important for God's people. The time that we spend calling up people, for example, you find out somebody's sick. The time that you spend talking to that person during the week, is that eternal?
Yes.
See, that's eternal. And what we do for our brethren is eternal. The sacrifices we make, the classes that we teach, the opportunities that we take to comfort or to encourage, And Paul tells the Thessalonians, of course I want to come back to you. Of course I want to work with you because you are my hope. Or our hope. Paul, Silas, and Timothy's hope. And joy and crown, not just now, but in the presence of our Lord Jesus Christ at his coming. Now, again, that's a concept that I think is important. I think that Paul here is giving us an opportunity to see our brotherly kindness in a little bit different light, that the opportunities we have to show our love and our care and our concern. Jesus said something like that. I was hungry and you what? You gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you, and the righteous say, when did that ever happen? And what does he say? When you did it unto one of the least of my brethren, of course those are in the church, you did it to me. And then he says, depart you cursed of my Father for the everlasting punishment or fire for prepared for the devil and his angels, because I was hungry and you didn't give me anything to eat, and I was thirsty and I was in prison and I was naked. And so you see from verse 19 that statement is really important. Rob, you had your hand up.
Well, you make a very good point, because we're all results oriented. that was a failure. I've heard people, no sense trying to teach anybody because nobody's going to listen. Nah. The parable of the sower, we're to sow the seed, we're to do good works. The results are on the people. The hearing is on them. And don't give up just because there's maybe too much apathy, even in America today. Just, you never know. Paul didn't give up. Jesus didn't give up. The apostles didn't give up. And boy, they dealt with a whole lot more than what we just... You just don't know. And even if you only were to save one person in your lifetime by teaching the gospel, then that's plenty.
Sure.
You've done your job. So don't become discouraged. I think you make a very good point. I mean, Paul can say that with what he's been through. Fight the good fight. Keep the faith. Keep doing what we're supposed to do. And never judge success by the results. I think it's a success by doing it.
Right. And this kind of helps us see something important. I mean, there's certain lines of work, like a doctor. Does a doctor just take care of patients because he wants to make money? See, what kind of a doctor would he be if he didn't care?
No.
And should a preacher be preaching the gospel to a congregation just as a job, just as a way to make money?
No.
See, if we don't have these attitudes that Paul is expressing here, then I think we have a one-dimensional view. In other words, we can do everything the Lord asks us to do just because it's commands. I'm going to do this command, this command, this command, this command. I'm going to do everything the Lord said, but I never get to these kind of emotions. Is there kind of a problem there? Yeah, because you don't have the right motivation. And this is a struggle because we only have so much time, so much emotional energy, so much opportunities to do the things that we want to do and we need to do. And so... like I said, here's Paul, and he could say the same thing about the church in Philippi, the churches in Galatia, the churches that he has established, anxiety for all the churches, praying. And every time he writes a congregation, how does he always start it? I'm praying. I'm continually praying for you. You're thinking, how did Paul have time to continually pray for all these congregations and all the people that he says he has the opportunity to pray for? And what's the answer?
He just did it.
He took the time to do that. It's just like, you know, how do you find the time to brush your teeth every day? This is part of our routine. It's part of what we do. And, well, does that mean I can't do something else because I'm brushing my teeth? Oh, yeah, it means that. But what's more important? And of course, brush your teeth, nothing compared to this. All right, and then verse 20, he says it again. For you are our glory. So we have hope, joy, glory, crown, rejoicing, all tied to the second coming and the preparations that we're making now so that we can have that glory and joy and crown. So think about Dorcas. I mean, you know, some of you are probably thinking, well, I'm not a preacher and I don't have these kind of responsibilities. But what were those widows doing when Dorcas was lying there dead? They were weeping. And what were they showing Peter?
They cared about her.
the garments that she was making, right? Now, where'd she find the time to make those garments? Well, she made time. She made time. I mean, you have to make priorities, and then you have to do it. But like Paul told Titus so many times, let our people be zealous of good works, that they be not unfruitful. So there are good works that we're supposed to be doing, and that's not just attending services and attending Bible class, and then we've done everything a Christian needs to do. There's a lot more that could be done, and we need to factor that in. Virgil?
Yeah, I'm kind of searching the words in my mind as to explain what I'm going to try to explain. Within a congregation, if I become a member or a part of it, it seems to me that there needs to be an attitude that I need to get to know this congregation, that I need to become one that works with the congregation, that I feel a part of this congregation.
Right.
And of course, that takes some effort on us to do that. And it isn't something that's just a passing thing. And I fear sometimes that it may be a passing thing with some over a long period of time, because you can see they're gone and you don't hear anymore and they're off someplace else. And then you find out, well, there's been grumbling going on. They don't like this. They don't like that. They don't like this person. That's nonsense. If we have the feelings, I think, that we see with Paul expressed here with the Thessalonian church, he had true feelings for these people. And he would just as soon be there as to any place. But there was a calling, obviously, in what he was involved in is going to take him away. Where a lot of times we take and see people that's taken away from a congregation of their own good.
Right.
They just decide, I don't like it. And why is it? They couldn't tell you why. But they just don't feel welcome. Or, you know, you hear all of these different kinds of things. And the place that they're going is probably not any better than the place that they're at. And anyway, I'll just shut up about it. But it takes an effort on our part to become part of something. And we need to take and grow in that and become really fervent about it. That this, in a sense, is my home. This is my people. I want to be part of it. I want to know these people.
Yeah, I like to quote John F. Kennedy of all people, right? When he said, ask not what your country can do for you, but for what you can do for your country.
Yes.
And a lot of people who are placing membership today, are they coming here looking for what they can bring to the congregation, or are they coming here looking for what they're going to get from the congregation?
The latter.
And the decision they make about where to go is often based more on personal value that they're going to receive than it is the work that they're wanting to do. And that's just become more and more prevalent. I've seen this. I've noticed this with new converts. You used to be, you'd baptize someone, and within a few weeks they wanted to lead prayer, they wanted to lead singing, they wanted to be an elder, they were looking to serve. How about today? You know, when we tell them you need to be here for all three services, what do a lot of them do right then? You know, I wasn't signing on for this. Brian?
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. It depends on, I guess, where you're at in the world, right? I mean, what we're seeing here in the United States is because we've had the church here for many years, and we're just in this phase now, right? Older generation, people not as interested in the Lord. Yet if you go to India, I think in some ways it's almost kind of analogous to what Paul's dealing with here. You have a lot of young churches who are being pulled by the influence, in this case, of Judaizing teachers and those kinds of things. In places like India, you know, these people have come out of charismatic religions, and they're being threatened to go to jail, and people are telling them you're in the wrong religion. And for the most part, we don't hear that here today in the U.S. You know, we're at a different space, if you will. I guess Malawi is the same way, right? It's in its own maturity cycle in that regard.
Right.
And so anyhow, going back to the first century here, you know, you can see how valuable it was for somebody like Paul to stay in touch with these churches, how much love he had for them, because he saw that they were vulnerable. They were, people were trying to influence them. And so anyhow, very, you can kind of understand why there's such a love there. He really right. wants to make sure he keeps them on the right track.
And you can test yourself in this. How often do you pray for Prince and for the people over there? I sent a letter out yesterday talking about how Prince is going into the lion's den today. And he realizes how dangerous it is for him to go there, but he's about to lose the whole congregation to persecution. And so I told him, is it dangerous for you? He said, well, yeah, it's very dangerous. I'm going to have to be very careful because the place is being watched, and they would love to get Prince. And so did you pray? I mean, did we even give it a second thought? When the announcements are made on Sunday morning, do we ever actually bring those into our prayers? And so it tells us something about our character, is all I'm saying. And when we lay ourselves on what Paul is saying here, how do we come out? Do we come out really good, or do we come out maybe we've got some work to do? Because there will be no joy or crown or rejoicing or glory if all we did was attend Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night and never gave any real thought to any of the needs that anybody ever had personally. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there, and let's move on into chapter 3. So, when we could no longer endure it, right, all these emotions were boiling up in Paul. He was concerned for them, his desire to get back to them, his interest in them, his realization of how important they were, and as he told the Galatians, I might have been running in vain. I mean, all the time I put here, if you all fall away, what does that do to all my work? It just gets burned up. It's all in vain. So when we could no longer endure it, in other words, we felt the need to help you. And so we thought it good to be left in Athens alone. Now, as you read that chapter, you read about how Paul dealt with the people in Athens, do you get the sense that it would have been nice for him to have somebody he could lean on, somebody he could talk to, somebody he could share the burden with? They're mocking at him, they're laughing at him, he's vexed in his soul because everywhere he turns there's an idol, and he just realizes how complex trying to start a congregation in such a varied environment, and he needed Silas and Timothy. Matter of fact, when he left Thessalonica, he left word for Silas and Timothy to come to him with all haste or with all speed. But as soon as they get there and he finds out the dire circumstances of the church in Thessalonica, what does he decide?
Send
them back. I'm going to make the sacrifice here. I need Silas and Timothy. I need their support. I need their help. I need them to help me here. But when I couldn't stand, and again, all he's trying to do is prove to these people, we didn't just come in and then leave. We came in, we wanted to stay, we longed to stay, and here is the down payment. I decided I'd rather be alone so that you could get what you needed. All right, so let's go ahead and jump to the third page now. So, verse 2. Now, it's interesting here because we don't. When do we meet Timothy? When does Timothy come into the scriptures? Right at the beginning of the first journey, or the second journey, right?
Yeah.
Barnabas takes John Mark, Paul takes Silas, but when he comes to Lystra, who does he find?
Timothy.
Young man named Timothy. Now, how'd the last guy work out, John Mark? John Mark didn't work out too well. But now what is he saying about Timothy? Our brother, our minister, our fellow laborer. So is he elevating Timothy?
Yeah.
These are high compliments. He's our brother and minister, which is the Greek word that we get the word deacon from. So this is a ministry of service and helpfulness. Remember we talked about serving tables and the attitude of a waiter to the needs of the people who are sitting there. What's his tip going to be based on?
The service.
Yeah, how well he serves. And so Timothy is a servant. He's a minister, just like that. He cares about the people he's working with. and equal co-worker, co-laborer in the gospel. So I've sent him, since I couldn't come, I've sent him to establish you. And that word is basically what you do when you put a fence post in the ground. You dig the hole, you put the piece of wood in there, and then what do? You pack it in. You check the level, you stabilize it so that it's going to be there for many years. And so that's what Timothy needs to do with Christians. We've baptized them, but now they need to be established. They need to be made stable, to be confirmed and fixed. Kind of like Paul said in Philippians, when he said, some people are preaching Christ out of faction, hoping to stir up trouble for me in my chains. However, I'm set for the defense of the gospel. So I'm fixed. I don't care what happens. I'm going to defend the gospel. Brent?
How old do you think Timothy was here? I mean, he's relatively young, right? And he's being left behind or sent to Thessalonica. He's in his 20s, you think?
He's still called a young man in 1 Timothy, which is 65 A.D. So if he's still a young man, which is probably in his 40s, now we're all the way back here. So, yeah, I'd say he's probably 18, 20 when they pick him up.
Pretty young.
He wouldn't be 13. I mean, obviously that would be, you wouldn't do that. But I would say 18, 20. He's a young man, but he's fixed and he's stable. Yeah, he's probably in his 20s now. And I think a lot of us who were converted early in life, we can think back to what we were like in our 20s, and we were stable, we were useful. And so he sent them to establish and encourage. Now, the translators picked encourage, but there's actually four or five words that you could use here, because it's literally the Greek word calling to your side. So it could be admonish you, it could be rebuking you, it could be comforting you, entreating, beseeching, begging. And so, whatever's needed. If you need to be rebuked, Timothy will be there to rebuke you. If you need to be helped, but it will be done calling up to your side, putting your arm around them, and talking to them like you would an older brother. It's going to be exhortation in the manner in which he does it. So Timothy is highly extolled here. And so I'm sending him, and don't think I'm sending him because I don't want to come. I want to come, but I would prefer to be alone and send him, because Paul could not come back there. All right, verse 3. The purpose of Timothy coming back is so that no one should be shaken by these afflictions. Now, the word Paul used is the word for wagging the tail of a dog. So, if you could imagine holding on, standing on the tail of a dog when he's wagging it, how long do you think you could stay on there? And that's the figure behind this word. So, he says, I'm afraid that you're going to be shaken off. You're going to be tossed to and fro and carried about. And you're going to be, as Jesus pointed out, when tribulations and afflictions come regarding the word, they fall. They get knocked here, knocked here, knocked here, and they just say, I just can't do this. So none of you should be shaken. And Paul had told Paul and Barnabas in Acts 14:21, there toward the bottom of the page, exhorting them to continue in the faith, saying, we must through many tribulations enter the kingdom of God. So, did God promise us a bed of roses? Did God promise that we would just be pampered into heaven? So, he didn't. And these people show how bad it can get. Whoops. These people show how bad it can get. Are we a little discouraged right now with the way the country's going? Could it get worse?
Yeah.
It'd get a lot worse. And get ready, because it may. That which has been is that which shall be. Is it impossible for America to end up like these people, persecuting Christians? Like what Prince is dealing with right now? The Hindus are militant about destroying and rooting out the Christians and the Muslims, and they're going to do it if they possibly can. And we're not there yet, but most of the things we stand for are in the way of what these ruling people want today. They want abortion. They want homosexuality. They want transsexuality. They want ungodliness. And where are we going to stand on that? And if we stand against it, what's going to happen? What are they doing to these Supreme Court justices right now who declared that abortion is not in the Constitution and that it is not law and that it needs to be decided individually? And what are they doing to them?
Persecuting, stalking them. And
you know, I read yesterday that Kavanaugh was at a restaurant. And the protesters came in and chased him out. And then the people who were defending him, including the restaurant, now they're after them. And what's going to happen when we have to stand up and say something? Because anybody here not agree with what Kavanaugh did? Anybody here think abortion is a right to kill babies? That's a right that was put in the Constitution? So we're standing with them. All right, Virgil.
Yes, in our country, there's been a lot of people in the past, present, and probably in the future also, that has received persecution, although most of them were not Christians, but they were perceived to be like the young woman who was shot at the Columbine right. shooting. She was asked a question. Whether she had faith in Jesus, she said yes, and he shot her. Well, that now we're getting down to the point where they're getting a little more factual about what your beliefs are. And you're right. It may come to that where they're going to take and find out that we live in a nation where probably 70% or 80% are run. Profess to be Christian, or they're really not. They just know what the word is.
Right.
And so they're being tackled because of that. But anybody right now that disagrees with this group that is roaming this land, and that's what's happening, and we call it the cancel culture. And they are in great numbers and causing a great amount of problems for people that are, like, against abortion. They're against transsexual relationships, all of this here stuff. And if you don't take and count out to our philosophy, our platform, we're going to take and make sure that you're hurting. You're not going to have a job anymore. You can't take and live in your own home. We're going to take and harass you to death.
Right.
And that's where it's coming. Whether or not it will end up with people coming like in this building where we are right now and doing things to us. We don't know, but we've got to be thinking about this.
Yeah, I would say the chances are very good if we start becoming outspoken
yes.
about these things. And so it's easy to just kind of keep your head down. Yesterday we were doing a podcast and I had the opportunity to make a point about men sleeping with men and women sleeping with women, and we learned that's fornication and it's sin. And I thought, man, I wonder if I should have said that or not. But why should I wonder if I should have said it or not?
Yeah.
Is it true? Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
What if it puts the website and the church into the crosshairs of a target? Would we all say, Alan, you shouldn't have said that? So it's interesting. Now, you don't have to go out and, you know, we don't need to put a sign out there, all gays are going to hell. I mean, that would that be a smart thing to do?
No.
Absolutely not. But if we're preaching against homosexuality and some visitors come in, are we going to say, well, I better change my sermon. I better preach on faith today because I don't know where they're at. But what is our preaching supposed to be?
In season and out of season.
And so, as I said, you know, I hate to keep getting, you know, well, I don't hate to. I think we need to be prepared. We could end up in prison. We could end up being persecuted. We could end up losing our job. People are already for the same things we agree with. We just haven't been singled out yet. Right now, it's just political persecution. If you dare to get up and say something publicly against their orthodoxy, then they're going to come after you with everything that they can. And so I don't know if you saw it yesterday. There was a general who who was making a joke. He said, well, it's good to see that Joe Biden finally knows what a woman is, because have you seen what's going on? What's a woman? And they fired him just because he said that. They said, I think it was a 3-star general. It was just yesterday. And all he said was, well, it's good that these people are trying to figure out what a woman is. Isn't it good for them to figure out what a woman is?
Sure.
Did you see the teachers' union yesterday decided that we need to get rid of the word mother? Because mother is ambiguous. When people think of a mother, they think of a woman who's had a baby, and that's not what a mother is. So we're going to get rid of the word. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm just really concerned because it's a political situation, but it has moral implications. And whatever your political persuasion is, if you stand for those things that these other people are against, sooner or later, you're going to get in the crosshairs too, even though we're not supposed to be political at all. But when you see God's laws trampled on, you can't just sit back and say, well, I'm a Democrat and therefore this is okay, or I'm a Republican and therefore I don't like this. Has nothing to do with Democrat or Republican. If you're a Christian, you're against abortion. If you're a Christian, you're opposed to homosexuality. If you're a Christian, you don't want doctors telling young kids that you're a boy's body, but you're really a girl. And we don't want that. And so, all right, so they were being afflicted. We could see the same thing. And it's interesting, if you notice at the very bottom of page 3, for you yourselves know that we are appointed to this. All right, so God has appointed Christians to persecution. God has appointed Christians to afflictions. Now, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean back in eternity God said, you know, I want all of the followers of Jesus to be beaten and persecuted and mistreated and abused? Is that what, and he appointed us for that?
No.
No. What it is, and Jesus said the same thing, do you think I came to bring peace on the earth? I didn't come to bring peace, I came to bring a sword, because if you take a stand, the other side is going to oppose you. David, I'm sorry I didn't see your hand earlier.
During this time of persecution for Christians, we will know that we have prepared ourselves for that. That is our harvest time. That's when our faith is going to be tested even more so. So, that's my thought on it.
Yeah. I just think you need to have it in the back of your mind. Sooner or later, they're starting to burn some Catholic churches down right now. And again, last week I saw this. One of the Catholic churches near Washington had a service a few weeks ago to apologize for the teachings of the Catholic Church on homosexuality.
Yeah. Shame on that.
You believe that?
They
had a service to apologize to the transsexuals and the homosexuals because the Catholic Church is teaching that that's wrong. Now, where's that going to leave us one of these days? Because can we do that? Let's have a service next week and let's apologize to the people who have abortions and the people because the Bible teaches that those things are wrong. What would you say?
That's wrong.
But we're already here. You're thinking, that's crazy stuff, Alan. How could you even think that's going to happen? It's already happening. And like I said, if the Catholic Church starts apologizing for homosexuality, we're going to be out there all by ourselves. There aren't many. I'm expecting the Mormons to get a new revelation any day now, aren't you? I mean, they had a good revelation back in the turn of the century, and they'll probably get another one here. Homosexuality is fine, because they got to do that if they're going to survive. All right, anyway, guys, that's where we're at. Yes?
In the Bible, I think in Acts, weren't the Christians thrown and the lion's dens and all these things that came against them back during that time?
They were. Not in the book of Acts, but after the book of Acts finished, yeah.
Okay,
definitely that happened.
Well, you know, the way y'all look at it, when we stand for these things, the same thing is actually going to be with us also, too. It's not going to be the lion's den and things like that, but what you're describing, it's like that, and it's going to get even worse. Because it's getting down to a point where God is going to know who's on his side. And you have all of those examples and things in the Old Testament as to how people worshiped and what they thought about different things. And it's getting down to Christians also, too. We can't stop teaching what we know is right. In other words, are you angry with me because I tell you the truth? And if we are telling the truth, and which we are, then we need to expect this. And these are things that we really probably need to really talk about, because I don't think it's going to change. It's not going to get any better, especially whenever we teach what God's word, we know what God's word is saying.
Right.
So we just might as well get ourselves ready for this.
Just start praying. Father, please help me to prepare for persecution and tribulation. Give me the wisdom and the perseverance to be able to handle it, because it may be 15 years before it happens. It may be tomorrow. Don't know. But it will happen.
Yeah.
One of these days, a preacher for the Church of Christ somewhere in the country is going to preach a sermon, and people are going to hear about it, and the target's going to come down, and anybody who preaches against this, and where are we going to be? Well, we're going to be right with them. All right, let's go ahead and stop there, guys. Appreciate your time, and we'll pick up next week in verse 3.